This podcast is brought to you by The Binge Watchers Mafia. If you like what you hear here, you can subscribe to us on iTunes. You can also subscribe to us at our blog at bingewatchersmafia.blogspot.com. Also, you can follow us on Twitter for daily recaps and random tweets at BW Mafia.
Hello and welcome to Episode 7 of the Game of Thrones Recap Podcast on the Binge Watchers Mafia Podcast Network. My name is Frank Malafronti. As always, I'm here with Ankit Singh. Ankit, Episode 7, a bit of a downer after the last five in a row, kind of setting up the rest of the season.
Yeah, I knew you would say that. The minute that episode started with the Hound, and it start usually they do like the intro music and then it goes into the show.
Yeah.
But they did the, like, you know, the Hound scene and then the intro, which I thought kind of...
Yeah, a rare cold open on Game of Thrones.
You know what this episode kind of reminds me of? It's like every great show, when it's in the midst of a really great season, it's kind of like a break episode. It's not meant to be good, but it oftentimes is really good. It's more of like the good acting, good lines, good writing, good all that. But it's not a lot of action, not a lot of plot.
Exactly. And I agree with you. I really liked this episode for what it was. I thought a lot of the scenes were really strong. I liked some of the character development we got. I got like the chance to have some characters interact that normally don't interact and get some fun scenes out of that. And just keep the plot moving without any real gigantic tectonic movements.
Right. From a binge-watching perspective, this is a great episode.
Yeah. This is definitely – I'd say this was probably a 50% Candy Crush episode for you.
No, because there were a lot of characters we haven't seen in a while. I enjoyed the scenes with the Hound. They were very well lit.
So. Yeah, it was daytime in all three. Yeah. That's so helpful.
I enjoyed that. But let's talk about the Hound.
Yeah, so the Hound is back.
Right.
I was not surprised that the Hound wasn't dead. Yeah, the general rule is – go ahead.
No, you're you know, you've been calling for the fight between the Hound and the Mountain. Looks like it's about to come true.
Yeah, I think this is definitely the start of the Hound returning, maybe joining the Faith Militant, maybe just going back to King's Landing. But he's definitely going to fight his brother. There are some things, there are some characters on Game of Thrones where you kind of know what they're going to do, and others where you have no idea. And the Hound is definitely in that. I have a pretty good idea what's going on camp. But I really, really liked these scenes with him. I really like the Septon, whose name was Brother Ray. If you were watching the subtitles, you saw that his name was Ray, R-A-Y. And he was played by a tremendous actor who I absolutely love, Ian McShane.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
Love him. Love everything he's ever been in, starting with Deadwood. He's also on this great show on NBC called Kings, which only ran for one season. And basically, every time a new character is going to be introduced on Game of Thrones, and if it's a guy... people say, oh, Ian McShane, he'll definitely play that guy. So he's one of those people who we knew would be on the show. Like Mance Rayder, people were saying, oh, that'd be a great Ian McShane character.
Yeah.
You know, there have been so many ones like that where it definitely could have been him. So I'm really pissed that they picked one where he was only on one episode and now he's absolutely dead because we saw the body.
Right.
And we know that if you see the body and you're not named Jon Snow, then you're dead.
Right.
So he's dead.
It's funny because you could literally say that about any like older gentleman who has like nice hair, like nice white hair. Like, can we expect Clooney to be on Game of Thrones?
Clooney? That would be so awesome. It would never happen, but it would be so awesome. But I'm telling you that this guy is just one of those people that people assume because he's been on HBO before. Right. And there's like kind of an HBO... incest thing going on where the characters and the actors are often in a lot of the same shows. Mm-hmm. Littlefinger being a good example, and there's a lot of others. But I was glad this guy was on. What'd you think of the Hound overall? Are you – because here's what the Hound and Rey was all about. There was a couple different main themes. One is what Rey is saying – what Rey was saying, that it's never too late to come back. First of all, do you believe that?
I think there's no other way to live life, right? You can't live your life thinking that there are no ways to come back, you know, that there's no redemption for you, right? Mm. So from an individual perspective, I think that's true. In the overall sense of things, that's not true. there are some things you can't come back from. A lot of things you can come back from, but, you know, some things you can't.
Yeah, Fitzgerald was famously misquoted for the "there are no second acts in American Lives" line.
Yeah.
Which people have debated endlessly. There are definitely second and third acts in Game of Thrones Lives.
Oh, for sure.
So it is technically on Game of Thrones never too late to come back.
Yeah.
But it's good for the Hound to hear that, because he's one of those characters that can definitely become very depressed and turn very much inward and feel like that he never can redeem himself. And we all knew the Hound was a good guy. We knew it from the very early days with Sansa and then later with Arya.
Right.
That the Hound has something inside him.
Right. He's got a heart, you know. And the problem with the Hound is that he kind of reminds, like, he's kind of a rough rider, you know. Like, he's like a ride or die kind of guy, except he just thinks too much.
He does.
Like, his conviction, like, he doesn't really have any conviction in a lot of, like, if he hits, like, a wall in something, he starts to lose, you know, lose belief in himself and his convictions. So it's easy for him to waver, which is weird, because he's supposed to be, like, this brute of a guy, right, who just knows how to kill and just, that's his go-to. And when he loses that, it kind of shakes you up a bit. But I like how he's playing the character. I think it's great.
And he definitely is a killer. He picked up that axe. People are going to die next episode.
I mean, he's gotten his conviction back, which was great to see at the end of the episode, right?
Yeah, unnamed Brotherhood Without Banners men are going to be slaughtered next episode.
They're all
going
to die.
Do you think Thoros of Myr will return? Do you remember him?
No.
He was the red priest that kept reviving Beric Dondarrion. He had like a beard and he drank a lot. Well, he was named Thoros of Myr, and he might come back for an episode. He might die. You never know.
Yeah.
I would give him pretty good odds of coming back and dying, because as we know, if your character isn't really going anywhere and you've kind of hit a dead end, they will kill you.
If
we haven't seen him for a while, maybe they'll just bring him back to kill him.
Right. I mean, Game of Thrones has like one of the highest budgets on TV, right?
Yeah, they could spare the money to kill him.
If they penny pinch more than they set out to initially.
Yeah. All right. So question: what do you think they were building?
I thought it was like a church.
Yeah, I think it was a church, right?
Like, it was supposed to resemble something of a sanctuary.
Yeah.
Because it had kind of like a pointy top, so maybe, I don't know. Like, but that's what I would guess.
Yeah, probably a church. I think that's like everyone's guessing.
Like a religious sanctuary.
But they didn't have houses, so I thought it was weird that they went church first. Also, I would definitely have bought a house first.
So did the Hound just show up there? How long has he been with these people? We didn't really get a time frame.
Yeah, they're definitely an alias race.
Yeah, if that's all the progress they've had in whatever, you know, a year or 2 years, that's really bad.
Yeah, they're really bad at their church building, if that's really as far. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe they were, you know, farming the food that they were eating. Yeah. Very unclear. They were really grubbing hard, though.
That looked good, man. When they were all sitting around eating, I was like, that's a good life.
Some nice stew.
Yeah.
You know, just enjoy it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Final thing on this, I want to ask you, so here's my thing about this scene, and it's kind of reinforcing this point that Game of Thrones morality is really hard, because obviously Rey, was preaching a very pacifist, a very loving morality, which is great and all that. But obviously he wasn't following the Game of Thrones rules. And I think I want to say now, and I read this in the New York Times recap for this episode, was that the cardinal rule on Game of Thrones is that if you refuse to deal with the world as it is, then you're basically dead. Like, that's the cardinal sin. You can't ignore the way the world actually is. Like, that's something that Ned and Rob did a lot.
Right.
They just ignored the reality of the world, and it cost them. And obviously it cost Brother Rey as well.
Yeah.
Do you think that any character can defy that rule?
Just blatantly defy that rule.
Like, can anyone change the rules and change this world for the better? I think there are some characters where it's possible.
Drogon. That's all I got.
He
makes his own rules. Everyone else has to follow his rules.
Yeah, I think Daenerys and maybe Jon and maybe a couple other people have the power.
Daenerys' biggest flaw has been the same as Ned Stark's.
It's very true. She has not followed the rules of the world. She has tried. She's ignored what the rules are.
Right. If the rule is you're going to die, then we can have a discussion, right? Because she hasn't died yet. But if the rule is you will not succeed until you accept the world for what it is and go from there, that's a rule I can get behind, unless your name is Drogon.
Yeah. Now, Jon Snow, the rule was that the wildlings and the northern people can never mix. They're always enemies. So yeah, that's kind of one example of where he's ignored, but, you know, he ignored the rules and he died. But
had sex with a wildling.
So that's just something I want to think about more. I want the listeners to think about. It seems like if you break the rules, you're in trouble. But we all kind of want, if there is a story here, for the world to improve and things to get better.
But, you know, the thing about any rule is that the best rules are ones that, you know, that are broken, I guess, the least, right? But that doesn't mean they're not broken.
Right.
All rules are meant to be broken at times. It's just some rules are bad rules because they get broken all the time.
Yeah. You can go down the list. Even in this episode, Arya broke the rules. She got stabbed a bunch of times.
Dude, Arya, I thought she was dead. I was like, I accepted it. Like, I didn't think she would die, but then when I saw it, I was like, do I really care? Because Arya's just been fucking around too much, man.
This is it, though. It's different now. It's different.
Explain to me why.
Because she's escaping now. She's like on the run now.
I get that, but she's not a good fighter, right?
She's got to learn that doesn't matter if it's an old lady. I saw that old lady. I was like, that's definitely something that's killing you, right?
Stay away from her, right? Like, me and you could figure that out.
Yeah,
and
she's got to be able to figure this shit out.
And what I see Arya as, and it's less of an assassin, more of as a spy. Right, I see Arya as a spy, where I don't think she's like primarily a killer. I think she's primarily like a thief. She's good for intel and stuff like that. Like, that's how I'd characterize Arya right now with the skill sets that she has. But I don't like see the assassin. I don't see the cold-blooded killer that she should be by now.
Maybe she's an actress. The first time we saw the actors, troupe. There was a guy that said he had a skin disease or like a skin problem. Mm-hmm. And they said that there was somebody that was traveling with them that had some medical expertise. So do you see her going back to this actor troupe?
You've brought this up 2 weeks in a row. And for the second time, no.
Okay. Well, we got more confirmation, or at least they were kind of leading me this way.
Yeah,
but we'll see.
You're more right about these things. You have way more of an edge in Game of Thrones because you pick up on the subtle cues that I really play Candy Crush through.
They really go heavy on, if you read the signs, then you can kind of predict the future. Right. They kind of lay things out ahead of time. They give you clues.
Yeah, they're big on foreshadowing.
And I love the clues because that's something that was honestly in the books a lot too, where he would set up things and he would give you prophecies and stuff. And so it's fun to be able to put this stuff together. Anything else about Arya?
No, I mean, she's turning into Sansa. she's turning into Sansa. Okay, let's talk about Sansa.
Who's Sansa turning into?
I'm about to bring it up.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have three scenes with Jon Snow, right?
Yes.
The first scene, he's dealing with the wildlings. And the way I saw this episode was basically, should we call it the Stark Army? How do we want to call this army?
Yeah, let's call it the Stark Army.
Okay, the Stark Army, right? It has three leaders, right? Davos, Jon Snow, Sansa, right? And what this episode was with these three leaders going around to different houses and each trying to show off their strengths in trying to persuade people to join them, right?
Mm.
The first one was Jon Snow and the Wildlings, which he did, you know, to the best of his ability, and he just knocked it out of the park, right?
Right. He's just really good at talking wildling to the wildlings.
Right, because he's a straight shooter, they're straight shooters.
Right, totally.
So, like, you know, straight shooters like other straight shooters. Then you get Davos, whoever that girl was, I don't remember her name, I don't really care to remember her name.
Her name was Lyanna Mormont.
Lyanna Mormont. She is phenomenal.
Right?
I mean, talk about acting, like, God, I think she's like 10 years old.
Really excited. She was in the show. She's 10 years old. I'm not sure how old the actor really is.
Right. I mean, the whole, like, you know, the way she made them work for it, and then 62, the six number 62 at the end. I was like, and then she's like, they're like me. All right. There were 10 of you guys. I was like, those are some rough riders. I'll take those 62 any day. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then Davos got that kill, right? Davos nailed whatever small number that is, right? But he showed off that he has this sympathetic side where he has this really good ability to relate to people who aren't as fortunate, right?
Right. And then also, I guess, to little girls. He's very good at making friends with prepubescent women.
Don't go that way.
There was nothing more to it. I wasn't saying he was some kind of pervert or anything.
Yeah,
he's just good at talking to little girls, I guess.
He is. He's just good at talking to people who, like, have bad situations forced upon him.
I like your way of putting it better.
Yeah. And then we get to the Sansa scene, which was phenomenal. I was like, thank you. What was the house they went to? It was Northern House Glover. Glover. And they want to just cut off their ties with the Starks. And they're about to do it. And Sansa comes in, you know, guns blazing, right?
Yeah, it just blows them out of the water, right? I mean, they were already probably at a no, but then they were really at a no. Sansa turned into an absolutely fuck no. No.
It turned from a polite no, thank you, to go fuck yourself.
Right.
Like, this dude came back, he was like, this bitch, oh my God.
In a way, only Sansa could do, right?
Yeah. Sansa, I say this, I will take this to my grave, she is a net negative on anything. Her plus minus is minus, I think, 50 for every 48 minutes. Like,
she's on the bench, she gets on the court.
Yeah.
And the whole team goes south, that's all you're saying.
Right. I mean... But now she looks good, so I kind of want to see her, but I don't want to hear her talk. She only had, like, one line up until that point, and then it got serious. I was like, fuck.
Okay, so you don't believe her when she says that they need more men.
Well, I do believe that. I think that much is obvious,
That right? seems really obvious.
Right. It's not, like, untrue. I also don't think Jon Snow doesn't know that they need more men, right?
So is this just a suicide mission?
No, but I think he... thinks that they can do it without the percentage. I mean, it's a much better fight if they have, you know, if it's on equal footing. But, you know, like, I would take 2,000 like soldiers ready to die for one cause. I'm not saying they have that. I'm just saying if he thinks, like, he really believes in the wild. And what's one of those giants worth?
It's worth a lot.
Right. So, like, he's got some scrappy, really, like, ride or die kind of people behind him. So, like, it's gonna be a good fight. Now, whether they're able to win, obviously it'd be easier with more men, but, you know, that's always the case. I don't think ever having more men is going to hurt your cause. So, like, she's stating the obvious there.
So who did she write the letter to?
It's got to be to Littlefinger, I think.
I'd say that's probably the best odds. I can think of some other candidates, but it's probably Littlefinger. She's probably just going to, you know, renege on her earlier... statement that she would never work with Littlefinger, right? Now she's kind of down to the wire.
Classic Sansa shit, man. What am I telling you, man? This is the kind of shit she's pulled. This is who she is. This is who she's been, and, you know, will continue to be. But at least she's trying now. Before, she wouldn't even try.
Yeah. The other main option I had in mind was this other house in the north that's really rich, the Manderleys that I keep talking about. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of expecting them to show up, but I don't know when. Yeah. But yeah, that's the other option. But I think most people can kind of point towards
it. Also, did you enjoy the teleportation?
Oh, I loved it. Loved it. I love all teleportation now. I watch it all the time. Do you know Brienne's going to be in a River Run by next episode?
Yeah.
You know how freaking far that is? That's like 2,000 miles. Like, no joke.
And she's traveling by horse.
Right.
Hilarious.
It's really, really funny. I mean, maybe it's kind of, we're at the point where we're beating a dead horse here, where we just can't talk about it anymore. But it is really, really
funny. The dead horse that Brienne is going to be riding.
Oh, yeah, because she's riding going to be one fucking horse. This isn't no Pony Express here, where she's going to get...
the same horse.
Oh, yeah, the same effing horse.
Unbelievable.
Oh, God. I know. So, yeah, I think we can all assume that. So that's going to be cool because Brienne is going to be with Jaime at River Run. They're kind of reuniting the team there.
Yeah.
On opposite sides, as they always really were, but I think it's interesting. I really, really like both these scenes. Bronn was back. You were wondering where Bronn was.
He's one of my favorite characters.
Yeah, he was just hanging out in a brothel, I guess. I don't know.
He just knows how to live life, man. He doesn't give a fuck about the throne. He doesn't care who wins, who loses. What do you say? He just wanted a big castle, some money, and a hot wife. That's
yeah,
all
he was really mad that he doesn't get paid anymore for doing stuff, which I thought was really funny.
Yeah.
Knights don't get paid. But
he also probably had the best line this season, right? Where somebody's like, oh, I'm the best fighter. I think Jaime told him I'm the best fighter in the Lannister army, right? That's the compliment he gave him.
Yeah.
And then he's like, that's like saying I have the biggest cock in an Unsullied army. I was like, that's hilarious.
Gotta love Bronn.
But yeah, he's good. But I really thought Jaime was like the MVP of this episode for me.
Jaime had some really strong scenes.
This is a side of Jaime you don't really get to see, and he's still like a bit timid. But he brought out the badass from season one that we kind of thought would come back at some point, but really hasn't.
It's still in there. He's definitely faking it, right, when he hits the guy across the face.
Yeah.
Because he can't fight, but he can act like he can still fight.
Yeah.
Which is good. This is Jaime at the head of the army. This is Jaime in his natural element. He's not really a good politician. He obviously chooses the wrong people to love. But he's a good fighter, and he's a very good soldier, and he will be a good battle commander.
Let me ask you this. From the books, is he a good strategist? Like, is he known for his ability to come up with a good war strategy?
No, he's not an exceptional strategist. Like, he was defeated by
soldier.
He was defeated by Robb Stark, obviously, in a good strategy by Robb Stark. He knows how to conduct a campaign. Like, he knows what the phrase aren't doing. Like, he knows how to conduct a siege. He knows, like, when you should parley, when you should fight. He's sort of like an average commander, but there's not a lot of people that possess even average battlefield command strategy and tactics.
So he's ahead of the curve in Game of Thrones.
Yeah, I'd say like the people that are left, because obviously his father was a very strong tactician and strategist. His brother, very strong. But there's not a lot of people left that have all the characteristics that you would need to lead an army. The charisma, the right name, and the actual knowledge to complete the campaign. So he was the right choice to do this. But he's not going to surprise us with any like incredible feats of strategy. But he's going to do a good job. He's not going to make any mistakes.
That's better than most.
It is better than most. It's certainly better than the phrase. It might not be better than the Blackfish, because the Blackfish is a very strong commander.
Yeah.
Probably stronger than Jaime. You could kind of get the sense that even from their meeting that the Blackfish might have the upper hand here. First of all, let's just remember who the Blackfish is. This is Catelyn's uncle, who is the younger brother of Catelyn's father, and he's called the Blackfish the same way that someone is the black sheep. He's sort of the outcast, not the runt of the litter, but sort of he wanted to go on his own way and do his own thing, so that's why he's the Blackfish. But he's still loyal to the Tullys, and he's still loyal to the cause. So him returning to the scene is not surprising. It's also not surprising that he was able to retake the castle. But how do you see this ending?
To be honest, I don't know. I mean, I might just call it this. Because you know Brienne's going to – isn't she going to come there?
Brienne is going to come there. So you can have – you have an idea because –
That's a reunion, right? The Jaime Brienne reunion.
Right. The Jaime Brienne reunion is real. It's happening.
Right.
And Sansa sent Brienne to get the Blackfish's army.
Yeah.
So you can imagine that Jaime would allow the Blackfish and his army to leave the castle and go north.
Mm-hmm.
Saying like, well, it's a problem for a later date. Right?
Right.
We'll take this castle, and then if they take Winterfell, like, we'll deal with it then. But I need this castle right now. and this is a way to do it, to get Brienne to convince the Blackfish that he's needed in Winterfell. You know, you're not going to be able to break out. They're just going to siege you for 2 years, and it's kind of nobody's going to win. But this is a chance for you to actually get a win. So I can see that.
Yeah, I think the writing – I mean, the more you say it, the more it seems like that's what's going to happen. Right?
Yeah, but I don't know if he's going to take the deal. He might not go through with it. He might decide that it's better to just hold the castle.
I doubt it. But because it's like kind of – for him, it's like do if you do and – I mean, you're fucked if you do and fucked if you don't, right? Because you've got this army just waiting for you to just run out of food, right?
Right.
And on the other side, if you don't do anything if you do decide to like go up, you're probably you're definitely gonna lose your castle, and then you're also gonna lose men to fight. So it's a shitty situation to be in,
right?
But I don't really have a lot to go off, you know, for this Blackfish character. I don't know like how, you know, if he's like a really strong character, strong in his convictions, or if he like, is he a good strategist? Like, he plays the percentages, or I don't know what he wants to do.
Yeah, generally just strong and all that. If you go back and watch his previous scenes, he was always a standout in all of his scenes. There was one where at the funeral of his brother, Catelyn's father, Edmure, the guy that gets captured at the Red Wedding, he's trying to shoot the arrow in that like Viking funeral thing where he's shooting the arrow into his father's boat so it burns. But he can't get the arrow right. So he shoots three arrows, and then the boat's getting really far away. So the Blackfish takes the bow and arrow from him and then makes one like incredibly long shot, and it lands right in there. Kind of throws the bow back to Edmure and just smirks. So that's a good scene. He's in a couple more like that.
I remember that scene, but that was like season three, I think.
It was a long time ago.
Yeah.
Just in general, a siege is not always the worst for the people inside the castle. It's actually a lot harder because – for all the food that the besieged army has, the people that are inside the castle, you need at least that much food for the people outside the castle. So that has to come from somewhere. And they're going to be outside. They're not inside the castle. They're not protected from the rain. So it's actually going to be really hard for them to siege this castle for this long.
There is another way I see this going, in which case there's just a fight.
Right. There could be an attempt to break in.
Not an all-out war, I don't think, but because I think, like, what if there's, like, you know, a trial by combat, but just to make decisions, right? Like, I'll fight you, and if I kill you, then your army comes with me.
Right.
And we get the castle. But if you kill me, we leave.
Yeah. You know, that's a possibility. You know, in the books, George Martin
I'd love to see Jaime fight the Blackfish.
Yeah, but obviously Jaime isn't going to do that. So then Jaime will say, well, then Bronn, you should fight them.
Right. But I'd love to see that too.
Yeah. I don't think the Blackfish accepts that deal. Yeah. So like if there's a trial by there's just like a combat, like, okay,
decision,
your best guy versus
combat.
My best guy kind of thing, like the way that they resolved wars like in ancient Greece or whatever. You know, the Blackfish probably just says no. Like, I won't fight you. I'm just going to, you know, stay where I am and fuck you. But yeah, it would be fun. I agree. So that's kind of where we stand with those characters. We're at a standstill, but we know that Brienne's coming to shake things up.
Yeah.
Let's move on to the three scenes in King's Landing, starting with Margaery and the High Sparrow.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that scene really doesn't mean anything anymore after she gave her grandmother that note with a flower on it.
Yeah, it's just another example of how I was super right about the High Sparrow. And you were super wrong.
Okay.
And it's because the High Sparrow is bad. And he's out for blood. He's a politician. And
he's a really good politician.
He's a really good politician. I mean, he captured the king in a literal sense.
Yes.
So because he has Tommen behind him, he can kind of do whatever he wants now. But he's now eliminating rivals. He got rid of Jaime.
Yes.
He's getting rid of Olenna.
Yes.
Next would be Kevin Lannister, the Hand of the King, his uncle.
Yes.
Tommen's uncle.
Right.
And really that's it, because Cersei, and this is also why I was super right about Cersei, and Olenna in the last scene, I'll just skip ahead for a second, because Olenna said how much Cersei sucks, and I was really happy to hear that, because Cersei does suck, and I hate her, and she's not smart. And Elena just said that, just totally ripped her a new one. And that was great. But let's just go. So in that first scene, we're all saying, okay, is Marjorie really a convert or is she not? But then she gives her the flower, which is the symbol of House Tyrell, right?
Right.
So that's sort of, she couldn't write her a note because then if the note got, if
I just thought, I just thought it meant like, listen, I got this. You
right.
Go, I got this.
Or just like, I'm not brainwashed. That's all it really means.
It's not even like, because it was kind of like a very cocky move, right? Because I don't think there was a chance of, like, the note getting caught or, like, any of that. Because she can just burn the note after she reads it, right?
Right, but I mean, like, while Marjorie has the note, could that SEPTA take the note from her? And if the note said, Grandma, I'm lying, then they would know that she's lying. But if it's just a note that has a flower on it, it's kind of not clear to the SEPTA, but it probably would be clear to Lady Elena.
Well, you're kind of playing the weird game there, because like, why did she have to conceal the note if it was just a flower, you know what I mean? And if she was able to conceal that note, why wouldn't she be able to conceal the other note?
It's if she doesn't give her the note secretly, then it doesn't really accomplish the message point, right?
So I guess she's just checking all her bases.
Just this was the best way to do what she needed to do, which was get a covert message to her grandmother that I'm not brainwashed in the safest way possible.
See, I'm taking it a step further. I'm saying that's her saying, I got this. You go.
All right, because I don't think she has it, dude.
I don't either.
Everyone's just running for the hills.
Yeah, I'm not saying she knows what she's doing. I'm just saying that's how it came across.
Wow, well, that's Marjorie just calling her shot. Is that what you're saying?
Marjorie just basically told me, like, she's got this. She's got a plan. Because what I... And I'll come back to this. The minute, you know, she is the number one influencer of the king. Right? It's not the High Sparrow.
But the only way she can influence him is in a sexual manner, which we learned that only requires her patience.
Yeah. It's all about patience.
If we didn't need to hate the High Sparrow, now we do. Good job, writers. That one really just got
me. Yeah, that one hits you in a place you didn't even know you had.
It hits you at, like, the base of your spine, and you sort of, like, you shake, you just kind of wriggle.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Gives you, like, the chills, but, like, also, like, in a really disgusting way. It's, like, disgusting chills. That's what that line did for me, man. All of the bad feelings. Though I got all of them at the same time.
It's just that one nerve that no one should ever hit.
Oh. Yeah.
It just releases every bad toxin.
Yeah, it's like your disgusting funny bone. So, those scenes were nice. I always love the Queen of Thorns. She's amazing. And we did get one final scene where she got to lay the smackdown on Cersei. So, are you ready to change your allegiance from Cersei?
Oh, no, dude. Oh,
God. All right. It's okay. We got to have some disagreements.
Yeah, I mean, our biggest two disagreements are Sansa and Cersei.
These are the two, right?
Yeah. Here's why I'm not worried yet. Because Cersei, and it's very simple, Cersei isn't dead yet.
True.
And you know, she is probably number two on the list of influencers of the king. And she plays this I'm a mother and I love my child card better than anyone I've ever seen. I mean, like, there is... I've seen a lot of family TV shows. No one plays that card better than she does. Maybe like Marie Barone from Everybody Loves Raymond comes close.
I think for me, the High Sparrow is number one now. The High Sparrow just leaped over everyone. He just came out of left field, and he's in the prime position as the number one influencer.
You're the guy that buys the stock up 300% on the day.
If you remember, I was buying the stock pretty low.
Sir. You know. But no, you bought the stock that he's a scumbag, but now you're saying he influences the king. I'm saying
he has influenced the king.
No, yeah, obviously he has, but I'm saying he's third on the list. If there were three roads, right? And Cersei told him to go one way. Marjorie told him to go the other way. And the High Sparrow said to go the third way. He's going Marjorie's way.
I think he's going High Sparrow. Unless it's something that he wouldn't agree to, like if he said, if the highest sparrow said, kill Marjorie or kill your mom, he would say right. no. But as long as he chooses the right asks, like the right questions, he's going to get the answer that he wants.
Yeah.
That's why I
think this whole season, and this obviously started from like the end of last season, is it's just been like, this is like the worst of Cersei because she's really been handcuffed.
Yeah.
And she hasn't been able to unleash her political will at all. But I think that's about to change because at the end of this show, it's going to be Daenerys versus Cersei. It is not going to be Daenerys versus the High Sparrow.
Okay, I will take that bet. And I will also offer you another one.
Okay.
And that is, who will die first, Sansa or Cersei? If neither die, it's a wash.
Who will die first?
Yes.
Sansa's so stupid, she might forget how to die.
All right, I thought this would be easy. I thought you would take Sansa and I would take Cersei.
But, like, she's with Jon Snow, man. And I don't think he's ever going to die, so she might not die with him.
Maybe she dies and he doesn't die.
Because I do think at the end of this show is, you know, Cersei dying. All right, I'll go with Sansa.
All right, you'll take Sansa. I'll take Cersei.
And I think Cersei makes it to the end, and I don't think Sansa really has a place at the end.
All right, and I'm taking High Sparrow, and you're taking Cersei.
Yes. Well, I'm really doubling.
Put those on the board. You're all over Cersei, and I love it. This is exactly where I got you in the corner. I got you in the Cersei corner, and that's where you're staying, bud. Sorry.
And you know what time it is, right? This is it. Episode 8, episode 9. This is where, you know, the shit starts to hit fans.
That's right. So that we had to get this in. Listeners, tell me, what do you think? Who's worse, Cersei or Sansa? That's a good question.
Also, you could throw Arya up there.
All right. Well, yeah. But nobody's going to pick Arya except for you.
Yeah, that's true.
Because everyone else loves Arya because they have a soul and you do not.
Also, it's been 6 years. Arya hasn't aged a day.
Some people age a tremendous amount and other people age zero. So time and space have both been warped on Game of Thrones.
The hyperbolic time chamber is real.
Okay, real quick, finish it off. Let's just talk about Yara and Theon real quick. Did you like this scene, yes or no?
I like woman-on-woman ass action. I like that.
I did not know that Yara was bi or gay, but that was cool.
Yeah.
I liked when she said she was going to fuck the tits off of her. I enjoyed
like,
that.
How? What are you going to do?
Yeah, I did also think that. But then I thought, well, we're not going to see because it's Game of Thrones. So we can't see woman-on-woman action.
No, it's against the rules.
Yeah, the rules are set in stone. We're not there yet.
Yeah.
And I just had one last thought, and that's basically if you don't know where to go and you don't know what to do on Game of Thrones, you go and find Daenerys.
Yeah.
Do you agree with that? Like, Daenerys is – like, what's the – is Daenerys – what's like one degree that or one like school that you would go to like if you have no career prospects at all?
Oh, easy. Law school.
Okay. Daenerys is the law school of Game of Thrones.
That might be the single greatest joke you've ever made.
I'm telling you, if you have nothing else, if you have no hope at all, you find Daenerys.
Just go to law school.
Go to law school.
Right.
So that's what I have to say about that. The Ironborn going to Daenerys. So now they're all going to go to Daenerys. Euron's going to Daenerys. Theon and Yara are going to Daenerys.
I mean, this is just going
to Tyrion already went there. He's already with Daenerys.
Tyrion is chilling. We haven't seen him in a while.
He's coming back.
Yeah.
He'll be back next episode. They can't go too long.
I mean, he's the star. Like, all things considered, him and Kit Harington are the two stars of the show. I don't even consider Dany a star anymore.
Well, yeah, so we can't go too long without seeing either of them. But Tyrion doesn't have much to do until Daenerys leaves Meereen.
Yeah.
He really doesn't get to do much. He had that scene where...
Yeah,
he...
she should really figure out how this fucking teleportation thing works.
Well, she's got a dragon, so she actually can teleport. She's the only character that actually can move faster than...
Which is hilarious, because her storyline goes to slow.
That's so true! We are preaching so much truth on this episode.
Oh,
listeners, I hope you enjoyed it. This was episode 7. Please rate and review the podcast stream on iTunes. Please follow us. Send us some nice comments or give us some answers to the questions that we posed this week.
Or mean ones. I heard like famous people get a lot of hate mail. I'd love.
I'll take some hate mail. I got a thick skin. I'm ready for it. So if you want to troll me on Twitter, go ahead.
Yeah.
At Frank Malafronti. You can definitely troll us, because I just want to say real quick, it has been a rough couple weeks. We're having some issues with editing.
Yeah.
But we're getting it. We're getting our ass in gear. We're going to have these episodes up regularly from now on. We'll have the other episodes. I know that you're missing episode 5 and episode 7 currently on iTunes. Those will be up. So bear with us. And we
Well, this is episode 7. So
this is episode 7. So this is the one you really want. But if you want to go back in later and hear what I did have to say about episode 3 and 5, I know you don't really care about what Anka has to say, listeners. I know you love me more. But thanks very much for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Yeah, that's what the people who are strong do. They ask for compliments.
Yeah, you know. I did say I had a thick skin, right?
All right. Peace.